This is part one of our interview with Lin-Manuel Miranda. Part two will be available next week, unless you're a time jumper and you're already in the future. Then it's available now. So go on, give it all a listen, and find out what's sparking Lin-Manuel these days.
The SparkFile podcast may contain profanity and other adult content. Please use your discretion.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I jump it in my spark file.
Spark file.
To be something that I want to make or how I want to be, I pump it in my spark file.
Spark file.
I jump into my spark file.
Spark file.
Let's open up the spark file.
Welcome to the Spark File, your one-stop De La Vega bodega for creative inspiration.
I'm Laura Cannon.
You hush up. And I'm Susan Blackwell. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome to you. You may be asking yourself, what exactly is a Spark File? Where do I get one? What do I file in it? These are such good questions, mm-hmm. and we have got answers.
A Spark File is the place where you consistently collect all your inspirations and fascinations. And if you're like us, and you're making stuff all the time, or want to be making stuff all the time, you already know, sometimes the wellspring of inspiration can run a little dry. We're here to refill it.
We're on the lookout for fresh ideas, images, and inspiration that spark our creativity and pique our curiosity, things that inspire us to get up off of our asses and make things like this podcast.
Hey. Or a musical that explores the lives of an entire neighborhood, or a bunch of founding fathers, or a whole mess of cheerleaders.
Or a social media account that lifts people up and fights hard for the powers of good.
Or a song that rallies support for people in need.
Or a mixtape that makes the entire world's booty bounce.
On today's Makersode, we're going to talk to someone who truly sparks us.
And that special someone is Lin-Manuel Miranda. Lin, welcome to
The Spark File.
I didn't know what else to do after that amazing introduction. I got my air horn out.
Was that your air horn? I always get air horns and vuvuzelas confused.
A common problem.
Vuvuzelas are like, what do they sound like? I can't remember.
It's
a good guess.
That's why it's confusing.
Welcome.
Lin.
Hi.
Before we get started, the price of admission. Can you please, real quick, tell us a little bit of a creative risk that you've taken recently?
I've committed to taking a creative risk twice a week on Broadway with Freestyle Love Supreme.
I think that qualifies.
A show with no rehearsal, wherein we have a beatboxer and two people on keyboards, and we show up like chefs at a potluck, and the audience throws suggestions at us, and 80 minutes later, they have our best first draft of a show.
Holy shit.
And it all rhymes.
It is crazy. Oh, I've had, I've enjoyed some Freestyle Love Supreme, and I kind of don't know. I don't understand how you do it. I don't understand how your nervous system tolerates it.
Well, right. The thing that never adapts is the nervous system. I have now done thousands of Freestyle Love Supreme shows. We get up there, we make it up on the spot, whatever they throw at us, that's the ingredients for the potluck dinner. But I literally have a nervous stomach. I think I have a low-grade fever before every show. Like you're fucking kidding me. No, you can't convince your reptile brain that it's going to be okay, because you're literally enacting an anxiety dream every time you go. It's I don't know my lines. No, you don't.
It is a miracle to hear you say that. Yeah. I have that intensely.
IBS?
I shit myself. Like I am, I have...
This is probably speaking out of school, but UTK and I are constantly in a race to who's the last one who can take a shit before we go
yes.
on stage.
Because after that restroom's on a five.
Yeah. And we're kind of both like, all right. And there's only one really near the stage.
I really didn't know that you got... You yeah. seem like such a cool cucumber. I really am surprised to hear that you get nervous like that.
Yeah. I mean, you can't convince like the part of your brain that is adapting to yeah. fight or flight yeah. response not to like but void yeah. its bowels. But, we don't know what we're going to yeah. say. Let's go.
But you've done it so much. Yeah. And I've been with those guys, not with you, but with your crew
with
before they perform. And they, I don't know. They seem like they're on point. They seem like they're prepared to do something extraordinary. But I think I've been with them. I'm like, is anybody shitting themselves? And maybe they're just being little Fonzies. I don't know. But it is.
I think it illustrates this point we're always trying to make. There's two different things. The talent is one, and the willingness to go through that fucking fear.
That's
to
the
do
fucking
it
price of admission. Yeah.
Is a different thing altogether.
Yeah. Good job.
Well, it's also, I mean, it's funny because I think about when we started doing it in 2003. Really 2002, because that's when Anthony Viniziale, who was friends with Tommy Kail,
love
that's
him.
How I met Anthony, would come and distract me in the basement of the Drama Bookshop. He'd be like, let's freestyle. Like, and just, we'd rap about our day and we'd try to make each other laugh. And that's what we would do. Yeah. And Anthony's the one who pushed us to get in front of audiences. And we, you know, I would, in my fear, try to plan lines. Like, well, if they've got a blue shirt, I'll have this great line to say.
My God.
Or if I have, if they have red hair, I'll have this zinger. Line. And here's what invariably would happen. I would say my blue shirt zinger, my red hair zinger, and then I'd shit the bed the rest of the time. And then I realized, like, I can't plan. I actually can't plan because I can't, the track that allows me to be open and listening and like in the moment and saying the
different
thing.
Different part of the brain.
They're completely different highways, and I will crash into the divider if I try to plan anything out.
That is fascinating.
That's an amazing analogy too.
I totally want to, I would love to interview Anthony. I love his brain, and I love all the thinking that he's done around neuroscience and neuroplasticity. I fucking love it. But I'm so heartened to hear this.
I think everyone will be, honestly. Because there's a fantasy of people who, you know, get to a certain level of success, and you're like, well, they must not feel the things that other people feel.
How do you feel like even when you go on, when you're like doing a freestyle on Jimmy Fallon, and that is such a...
scarier.
It seems like the platform, it's just...
Well, it's interesting.
The world is watching.
The world is watching. But when
you fucking nailed it. That you remember that you did a rhyme about Michael Jordan with his tongue out.
Oh yeah.
And you rhymed it with brung out, and I was like,
what?
It was mind meltingly good.
That was the first time too. So I was all the way open. I was
fully dilated.
I was fully dilated because you have to understand that's. My sister loves Jimmy Fallon. You know, like my sister used to say to me, I think before even Heights, she'd be like, I can't wait for you to get famous because I just feel like you and Jimmy Fallon would be friends.
Words. Yeah.
Like that's just, she was like, he seems
that's
nice.
She's
and he and Justin Timberlake like hip hop, like you like hip hop. Yeah. And I just feel like you'd be friends. Aww. So I kept thinking about my sister who was in the audience that night and just being like, I'm going to soak up all of this. So, you know, the funny thing about freestyle is it requires your antenna to be totally out because since you don't know what you're going to say, you need material and you're basically like a garbage disposal. That's like, you know, cause it's a mix of whatever's in your brain and then like whatever
eggshells,
the universe
banana
can
peels,
provide.
Yeah, give yeah. me
it's
all
that
of
Mr.
It.
Fusion scene in Back to the Future Part 2 where he's just throwing the garbage in the thing.
Yeah.
And so what an arcane reference.
I'm with you.
So that's the, and what's fun about that is it's the exact opposite muscle group of taking 7 years to write a musical, which is about my average time. I'm about, you know, 7 years. Heights was my 20s and Hamilton was my 30s
what
for the most part. We bring it on in the middle there.
What a nice balancer. That's great.
And so it's incredibly freeing.
Hi, Owen. Let's not act like Owen's not here.
Owen's here. And so is the sushi.
Lynn's going to eat a little bit on mic, so everybody enjoy that.
Give me some sweet ASMR salmon avocado.
All right.
Lynn, I think it's safe to say that you've passed the entry point into the Spark Fall. You're fully in. So you do so many things. We're really curious to know, how do you identify creatively?
When people say, what do you do? If somebody's been living in a bunker and they don't, they're like at a cocktail party, like, what do you do?
The easiest way to say it is I say I'm a writer and I'm a performer.
Yeah.
Because to me, those are the two sides of the same coin. And they feed each other. And sometimes it's songwriting and sometimes it's not. But It's always one of those two things.
I feel like your world's writer expanding performer. Though now as you prepare to direct.
Direct.
Gonna add that to your hyphenate.
I am indeed. Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah. It's really exciting. It's what I always wanted to do. That was like the first big thing.
You're kidding me.
Really?
I didn't know that.
All this was aligned to maybe one day I'll get to direct.
I did the hardest, dumbest, longest version of film school.
You're qualified. You did it.
You did it.
No, but I only applied to.
Oh my God, it makes so much sense because I think of little you, sometimes lonely you, making movies by yourself, either in your bedroom or like at your grandparents' house to, you know.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to me, but I never knew it consciously.
Yeah, that was the great gift of my childhood was like the camcorder era and having VHS and just. You could make stop motion. I mean, you've seen them because I post them all the time.
They're quality.
You know? I don't post my own children, but I'm happy to embarrass childhood me because he made hours of footage. You know what? He would want it seen. He thought they were really good.
He was just waiting for the audience. He finally has it.
I have to say though, I'm psyched that you had that camcorder and I'm also stoked that the internet didn't exist because just for your personal tiny safety.
I would be
famous
for wrestling a My Pet Monster alone. In a room instead of what I worked hard to become
That's
good
right.
at.
There you go. There you go. Full disclosure, Lynn and I have known each other for a long ass time. Mm-hmm. And it's so fun to have you on the Spark File because I feel like you've really got some creative shit figured out. And one of my favorite things about you is that as long as I've known you, you've been this playful, awesome, curious nerd burger, and you're always up for like creative shenanigans, whether it's some little thing that we pulled you into or some video, whatever you wanted to make. You've always been down to clown, like so many of our favorite people. And it just feels like now you're the same playful, curious, creative guy, but you've got this more elevated platform and you've got this larger megaphone. I just wondered, does it feel that way on the inside? Do you still feel the same? Or do you feel like with all of the success that you've experienced and all the accolades and approbation that you've changed in some fundamental way, as people do?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you said that we don't think that people who are at a certain place in their careers are afraid, whereas I think it's double. I'll give you a great example. You know, I performed Hamilton in Puerto Rico in January. I hadn't done it in 2.5 years. We had fear. That's where you like put the 80s graphic fear. But what was interesting about playing it was that I realized I'm not Act One Hamilton anymore. I'm Act Two Hamilton in a very real way. Like Act One Hamilton was like, I've spent 7 years writing this.
Yeah.
This is the best thing I know how to write.
Yeah.
Look out world.
Yeah.
See this fucking show. Somebody please see this fucking show and see how hard my collaborators and I have worked to make this thing. It was, I could channel that energy very easily.
Yeah.
Act Two Hamilton, who is juggling responsibilities and has a lot of different jobs and does not want to let down his country or his family. That shit is so real to me now.
That makes
because
so much sense.
I've gone from being like, look at this, look at what we can do to, you know, having a lot of things that I worked hard for and earned. Like when I look at how busy I am, I always throw it all on the desk and go, there's nothing I'd take off this desk. I wouldn't trade it. I'm saying yes to the things that 10-year-old me would like and 16-year-old me would like. I always really use that as like a check system in terms of what I say yes to and try not to talk myself into anything that doesn't feel right.
In your body. I was talking about this with Owen and it was regards to planning his wedding. Congratulations,
Owen.
But when he was talking about like, do we want flowers? Do we want videography? I was like, you're a grown-ass man. What do you like? Go through the checklist with Josh and see what you feel in your body, like viscerally, what lights you up and you say yes, and what makes you go, I don't want fucking flowers. I don't know why that
take
metaphor
that off
seems,
the table.
But it's the same with making, I think, creative choices about what you want to make, what external opportunities that come to you, and which ones of those you want to select.
Yeah.
You face that now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you want flowers at the wedding?
I want Owen to get married at Disney World. I want us all to go. But I don't really have that much say in Owen's wedding.
I love how there's an Owen's wedding theme trending just through this podcast. I love that. You know, one thing that I have noticed that I think it was always there, but now it really can shine, is I think I can see your activism more clearly in your creativity now than maybe when you were, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's interesting. I think that I always thought that I believe everything's political. My dad was in politics growing up. I think there's if you're the thing you're making takes place in the world, it has to either reflect or reject or comment upon it in some way. Therefore, all art is political. The weirdest prism through which I've been experiencing that lately is the Heights movie, because you know. When In the Heights came out in 2008, honestly, it was almost, if people had any criticism, it was like, oh, this is too loving. It's too beatific. It's Sesame Street, right?
And what's then, you know, changed?
Now we have an administration that demonizes our people, Latino people, like really more than anyone else ever has. And like choose a front, like Puerto Rico, the border, like just otherizes and dehumanizes at every turn. So while we're filming Carnival and everyone's waving the flags they're from, this somehow feels radical in 2019, whereas it just felt like a beautiful immigrant story in 2008. But the word immigrant story has a different connotation now than it did then. So it's weird to have time sort of point out the inherent politics of a work because the politics around it have changed so much.
Yeah.
And I think for the better, you know, when Sonny raps, what about immigration, politicians be hating, racism in this nation's gone from latent to blatant. It speaks more to 2020 than it,
isn't that interesting,
than it did to 2008.
How time rolls on and things stick in different ways.
Yeah. That's- It's always been there in my work, but I think we're in a more politicized age, and so that stuff comes out. Like, I never thought of Hamilton as being a radically political work. If it has any political opinion, it's that, hey, these are our fights. Like, these are our – this is inadvertently the origin story of our nation, and the sins of this country – we're still fighting today, and we're still like, they're all still there. Name it: slavery, gun control, foreign intervention, like all the shit that happens in the show happened 200 some odd years ago, and we're still dealing with all of it now. And in a way that's freeing, and in a way it's upsetting, but it's like, those are our fights. The same way that fight you're going to have with your sibling is a variation on the fight you had when you were teens. You always do this. You do this and this. No, you always do this.
Central conflict. Yeah. Central conflict. Yeah.
So I think that's about as political as Hamilton gets to me, but people have seen all kinds of other stuff in it.
Yeah, because now some of those things seem really hot to the touch that maybe when you first put it on paper, you're like, This is what it was and what it is, but
immigrants we get the job done was a throwaway punchline because I had a French guy and a guy from the West Indies on stage together for a moment alone before the Battle of Yorktown, and I was like, oh, look at us here.
Look at that.
It's like that meme of Paul Rudd. Look at us. Who'd have thought it?
Who'd have thought?
Interesting.
Lynn,
Susan, and now it's like
it's a battle cry. Amazing.
It's the movement. That line too became such a thing thanks to where we are politically. I don't know if you know, but Susan and I are preparing to lead a workshop soon at the Miranda Family Fellow Summit. We're excited.
My mouth is full of sushi.
We're so excited. Thanks for inviting us.
Thank you for joining us.
Oh my God, we are thrilled.
Yeah, we're excited.
Would you mind talking a little bit about that project?
This is the first time we're doing this. Basically, we sort of, first of all, I think a lesson I learned is if your friends are really smart and capable, work with your friends, especially if they're smarter than you. And so my best friend and roommate from college, Sarah Miller, was working.
Yes, Sarah Miller.
We met on a production of Jesus Christ Superstar. She was our choreographer. Owen was Pontius Pilate. I was Jesus. And now we all work together as adults.
She's awesome.
She is awesome. Yeah. And she was working in the nonprofit sector. And my dad and I realized we were both kind of killing ourselves on different philanthropy things without a unified theory, and just kind of, it just felt like we were putting out fires and trying to do everything. And I finally called Sarah and said, will you work for me?
Oh.
And we can just do philanthropy together, and you can help us focus our efforts. And so she's been on board working for us as a family for the past couple of years. And, you know, it's changed everything. And so one of the things we realized we were doing is we really wanted to sort of create more of a pipeline for artists of color to sort of get seen. We want more artists of color at the O'Neill. So we started sponsoring people there. We started sponsoring a scholarship at the University of Rhode Island, really because it's more bang for your buck. It's not as high a tuition as some of these more elite schools, but they provide a great theater education. And so it's like it's just getting more.
Is it so it's specifically for artists, theater artists or theater artists of color?
Yeah. And so we realized, oh, we have like enough people that we're mentoring in the various things we're doing to kind of hold a summit and talk about what we're about and talk about what the kinds of things we're getting behind. And so this weekend, you're going to meet artists, you're going to meet writers, you're going to meet filmmakers who are all kind of studying different things that we're helping in some way or another.
So cool. Yeah,
it's our first time trying it. Like, we're going to go take over the United Palace and see how it goes.
We're going to kick it off
early
in the morning.
You get a metric shit ton of shit done.
So much
shit
done.
We're like, holy crap, how do you do it? And you mentioned your projects on the table. What are the optimum conditions for you to achieve flow, know that you're getting things done, stay constructive?
Time and a deadline.
Time and a deadline.
Time and a deadline. Virginia Woolf, there's a reason we love A Room of One's Own. You fucking need it. And I really try, especially when it's writing projects, I try not to be superstitious. Like, I'm someone who's not like, I need my black wing pencils or I need this kind of moleskin.
Kelly O'Hara was like, don't be neurotic.
Don't be neurotic.
You can't. You have to, like, you lived life and you were in the school play and you didn't know what worked for you and you did fine. You know what I mean? Like, you can't. I wrote the back half of Hamilton in my in-law's laundry room because our apartment wasn't ready when the contractor said it would be. And so our son was born and I was living with my wife's parents and I wrote the duel like over a rumbling fucking dryer.
I think that's good for people to know and hear.
So good.
I think so too.
You don't have to be in like a beautifully appointed, I mean, we're in this gorgeously appointed office and you know, with all the support, and it doesn't have to be like that. It can be a rumbling dryer.
And it does not.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's also, the perfect conditions don't exist.
Yeah.
They don't exist. The world is the world and you have to make the space to make what you're making. And then the other important thing for me really is deadlines and being both practical and a little pie in the sky about those deadlines in terms of just, you know,
realistic, but also tight. And this is what we're working on at the summit on Saturday.
Yeah,
that's right.
This is all we're talking about is, you know, think of what the first step is, set a deadline against it. Mm-hmm. And then people are usually like, so I'm going to do that in 6 months. And we're like,
bring it forward
closer.
Yep.
We booked a theater for title of show and other shows. I booked three shows.
We didn't know what the fuck we were going to do.
Guys, who's writing something? What are we going to put on the stage? Because now there's a deadline. Yeah. It was like the crap your pants kind of deadline.
I really learned that from Tommy, who I'm sure you'll have on the show at some point.
He
would just say, let's meet next Friday. I mean, it was sort of let's meet next Friday every week for 5 years. I mean, and that's still kind of how we operate.
External accountability. Yes.
Because
I
can tell you about the weeks when I didn't have shit. And we go.
What does Tommy Kail look like when you show up and you don't have shit done?
He talks about what else we could be doing. Like, he also doesn't like, you're not in trouble.
Yeah.
You just have, it's just a less fun meeting. It's just like, okay, well, let's talk about, you know, it's shorter and you go, okay, well, let's see if Alex is going to be in town next week. And
yeah, there's something about external accountability to somebody who you respect that is, I think, critical for so many people.
Absolutely.
Some people can get it done by themselves, but.
Right. I mean, in Hamilton, I had this idea. I wrote the first song and then suddenly I had a deadline because I had that White House performance.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was like, okay, I told the world I'm writing this. And then the next year I worked on my shot. yeah. without really a deadline. And I thought, all this time working on this deadline. And then the way the next flurry of songs happened was I performed my shot at an Ars Nova benefit.
Yeah.
It was sort of the people of Freestyle Love Supreme performing things they actually write. That was sort of the hook of it. So Arthur sang some songs and I performed my shot. And Tommy sort of caught me upstairs in that pool room in the penthouse. And he said, you could write this faster than a song a year.
and you cared because you respect Tommy Cannon.
Yeah, and the song played really well. He also knows exactly when to talk to me. Like, I've just had like some lovely applause. The tank is full. Yeah. And he said, let's just circle a date. And the American Songbook Series had asked me to perform and they offered me Hamilton's birthday. January 11th.
Knowingly?
No.
Unwittingly.
Unwittingly. Wow. Just, do you want to do something from Heights? Do you want to do some songs? And they offered me January 11th.
That's
and he went,
spooky.
Okay, that's in 6 months. Let's write everything we can. We wrote 11 songs in 6 months. And that formed the spine.
That's amazing. I'm just having this like flashback memory of the first time I ever met you. It was at Ars Nova. Title of show was doing, I think we performed Die Vampire Die. Freestyle Love Supreme performed. Sure. So I met you in the green room. John Hodgman was on the bill and Nick Kroll was on the bill. And Nick, do you remember this?
No.
These are things I remember.
I remember Neil Medlin in his underwear singing Phantom mostly at those Ars Nova crossover events.
Because that's unforgettable.
Nick Kroll, two things I remember. Clearly, I remember meeting you. Three things I remember. Meeting you and that Freestyle Love Supreme crew. I remember accidentally the bathroom door backstage did not lock and I walked in on John Hodgman peeing with his penis in his hand and
medallion status.
And I remember Nick Kroll. I snuck up to watch Nick Kroll's stand-up set and this was at Upfronts and it was a room full of like suits. And I thought Nick Kroll was so fucking funny. He was so good.
Remains.
Nobody was laughing except this idiot in the back. And he told a September 11th joke that I thought was incredibly well crafted and really funny. But I think that I was the only one. But that was like, that was a place you wanted to be that night. That was crazy.
Yeah, so that's probably 2004, 2005.
I can't remember anything else. But I think that's when. I think that's when. First time I met you. Sorry to derail this. Would you describe yourself as an extrovert?
I wouldn't, actually.
You are blowing my butt off. How would you describe yourself?
I would describe myself as an introvert.
No.
Absolutely.
Lin-Manuel Miranda. Hand on a Bible.
Hand on a stack. Here's the thing, and this is going to sound fucked up. I don't know how to say it any other way. I'll tell you a funny story that's... Freestyle had a gig at some conference. It was like a conference where not TED Talk, but not TED Talk.
It
was one of those.
Yeah.
And we're there and we're meeting with other thinkers and doers. And I'm miserable in the corner because we're performing at the end of the night.
And you're just like...
And I'm just like so shy and I don't know. Oh. And Tommy was like, you don't like talking to people who don't already know who you are, so you can get over the introducing yourself part. And it's true. Like, I'm very shy at the, like, nice to meet you, but I'm better at it now because I'm
practice, public.
And the ice has been broken. And yeah, like, okay, we're going to jump off here. Yeah,
I much prefer a world where people know who I am, but and you I don't live have in a, to be like, hi, I'm
It's so interesting now. Like, watching the Billy Eichner thing that you guys did, it's so fascinating because now... I think it's probably a fairly common occurrence that people on the street are like, hi, I love you, which is as long as people keep it in, you know, appropriate.
But I was terrified.
It's not a bad
Billy
way
Eichner
to,
thing.
Well,
because me going up to street, I mean, that's my nightmare.
I've run the streets with Billy Eichner too. And that will, I can't wait to talk to him.
What he always edits out is how many people know who he is and how many people love him.
Now
he has to, because it's people walking around hoping he'll stop them.
Yeah.
And that's in the periphery. Yeah.
I think the other thing,
looking like, hey.
The other thing that people don't get to see is like how much energy that gig take. He's so good at it, and it's totally it's totally his thing.
Another Ars Nova baby.
Yeah.
Is Billy an extrovert?
That's a good
question.
Think
he works through it? He's an introvert and he works through it to do that.
If I had to put $20 down, I would say introvert.
Yeah, but you put $20 down but on Lynn
here's
being
the thing.
An extrovert.
Here's the thing. The first time you and I connected, really connected socially, I think you left a note for me at Stage Door and was and you were like, do you want to have a meal sometime, name, phone number? And I was like, I'm such an introverted person who has worked very hard to, you know, present, move through the world in a way that makes things possible. But I was like, wow, this guy's really on his shit together.
Look at that.
It blows my mind that you would describe yourself as an introvert. And I also think about the adventures you've had over the past few years. I feel like my nervous system would have been fried by the stuff that you do, and it's in quick succession, so there may not be a lot of downtime or recovery time. Right. And I just wonder, how is that for you?
It's the hard part.
This is legit rocking my world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you do need time to. If you look in my bag right now, you'll find 3 Hulk comic books. Which is what I've been doing. I hadn't read a comic book series in like years, and I was just like, I'm going to stop scrolling Twitter, and I'm going to read comic books when I'm in the car, as opposed to scroll.
That's a great idea.
So it's a little bit of solitude.
It's just a little bit of solitude. I see it in my older son now a lot. He's a lot like me. When he's comfortable in the room, there's no shutting him up, and like, here's the show. Mm-hmm. But then like, if it gets bigger than he can control, he's like, I'm gonna go to my room. I just need to go to my room and pretend to be a baby for a minute and then like come back.
Sweet baby.
Wow.
Yeah. Mine, I grew up in a family where it was a total family of 6. And I observed this about my younger self where I was like, oh, when I'm in rooms where there's more than 6 people, I start to get like, I'm going to go in my room and just play like I'm a baby for it. Like was my demarcation line.
What's interesting is I'm fine with a big room. It's tougher for a small room for me. Vanessa and I always talk about, my wife and I always talk about sort of party frequencies.
Vanessa's introvert?
Yeah, but like very outgoing for an introvert.
It's that thing though. I was just reading about this yesterday. There's a name for it. It's an acronym. It's like, I can't remember what it is. We'll put this in post. But it's basically you for things that you love. So for things you love and things you're passionate about, so that could be work, it could be a person, it could be, if you love it, if you're passionate about it, a willingness to stretch past introversion.
Yeah.
Mm.
So
back to the parties, you were saying
a perfect example was opening night of Freestyle Love Supreme. I think I've had a successful party if I have a 5-minute conversation with everyone in the room, and my wife will have had 3 45-minute conversations. And we literally look like a spiral graph if you time-lapsed our party. Like, awesome. I'd be like, hi, baby. Okay, I'm going to go do a lap. Shink. And I come back, and Vanessa's talking to Nancy Rose. And then shink. I talk to all these people. Hi, how are you? Did you like the show? Oh, it's so great to see you. How are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. Hear a little bit about them. Drop a joke. Poof, smoke bomb. Next conversation. Like, that to me is great. Like, nothing gets too deep. And I get to check in with everybody and see that they're cool. And then
family
Vanessa.
Family reunion.
I go back, and Vanessa's like, well, the divorce must have been really tough. And she's
going deep.
Deep somewhere. I'm like, how are you talking about that opening night? Okay, I gotta go. Zoop, zoop, zoop. And then like, it's like, it would look like she's the center, and then I just keep circling back, checking in, and she'll have had 4 conversations and go, that was a great party. And I'll have had 50 conversations and go, that was a great party.
It's really good.
Yeah.
What do you Cam? Know that? Do you? I'm feeling Vanessa right now.
I'm feeling Vanessa too.
I'm so much so that if I have one amazing conversation, I'm good. I could go.
One deep, good conversation.
And I'm like really, really connected with someone. I feel like I made a friend. I'm good.
But I think it's that what you're describing, that little bee pollinating around the party, that's why I think I have perceived you as an extrovert, because you are able to, you know, hit all the flowers.
What happens to you, out of curiosity, if someone does want to go deep in a conversation, or do you start feeling like I gotta see an exit plan here?
The feeling is one of anxiety that I'm at. There are other people at this party that I said I would talk to, and that I invited.
Yeah,
and I'm not being fair to them, and I'm not spreading the, like, that's where I think a little of it comes from.
Yeah, that makes sense.
at the same time, I hate the person who's talking to you and looking around the room. I'm not that guy.
No.
You know, yeah. When I'm with you, I'm with you.
But you know, you have a dollop. You've got to distribute your dollop.
Little dollop.
Yeah. Little Lynn dollops.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark files. Could be something that I wanna make or how I wanna be. I pump it in my spark files. I jump into my spark files. Let's open up the spark files.